It's the Morning Rush, live at 5.
So the kids are going to school. By now you know that. I'm sure you didn't go to bed without figuring that out. But I hope you had a chance to watch the press conference. My first thought about the union press conference was, doesn't that union represent some of the tech workers in the schools? Maybe I'm wrong about that. I thought they did. But they could use some tech people to put that press conference together. If you're going to use your laptop or whatever to do a press conference where the entire province is hanging on your every word, turn off some of the notifications. Bing, bing, ding, ding. Just me who noticed that. I know it wasn't just on my side because it was only when she was on and it went away when she was done. Katie, you were going through listening to sound on it.
Yes. Did you hear? Yeah, it's coming through in all of the sound bites that I have. Just a couple of them, but it's just ping, like email notifications going off.
That's the first thing I noticed. The second one was she was angry. I've never seen a union negotiator so unhappy with her own deal. Unbelievable. I mean, she hates this deal. And when asked if she's going to recommend it to the members, well, you know, as required, she'll recommend it. She's not recommending this deal at all. What happened in that negotiating room? Because it sounds like they've ultimately agreed to the same deal they turned down last week and asked for offered up another strike deadline. This is the one they were going to go to strike over. And yet, somehow, they've accepted it while hating it. Or is it they, though? That's the other question. Is it they? There's some reporting out there that other unions that had backed this union just a couple of weeks ago on the constitutional issue were not happy with the way this is going. Like, find a way to say yes. You've been given a great offer here. This is a win. Take it. Instead, it looked like they wanted to massively overstep. Well, while we're here, we're going to actually also tell you how to run the schools. It's not a union's role. Sure, represent the employees. But when it comes to bigger picture about how many teachers' assistants we hire, class sizes, all those things, that's our job as the parents and the taxpayers through our elected officials. That's the democratic process that does not. That's not the union. Yeah, the people who work there should have some input. A good manager wants to know, what do you think we need? But you can't go on strike because you want them to hire new people and create new positions. Well, clearly you can because they were going to. But it's a massive overstep, and I thought the union movement seemed to know that. And I think there may also, I'm hearing, we'll have some reporting on this later in the show, I think, but I'm hearing that even within the negotiating group, there was some strong disagreement about whether or not to take this deal. There was a big push. Look, let's take the deal. But one person was clearly not happy with it, and we heard from her yesterday, Laura Walton. Very angry indeed. I've never seen anything like it, a union leader said. Because the story broke, right, shortly after 5 o'clock, there's a tentative deal. And I screamed with delight, and my children sort of skulked off into their bedrooms. So, great. That's great. They were kind of hoping for a 1 or 2 day strike because they knew a strike is really a day off. Despite all this brave talk about online learning, they knew. Like the 1 day strike or protest, whatever you want to call it, 2 weeks ago, they didn't really learn anything or do anything. So they were disappointed about that, but they left before the next part, right? So there's the education minister seeming pleased to get a deal done. Happy for the students, happy for the parents who don't have to get daycare. Following the rules and not giving details of the contract. Then the union comes on. Yeah, we've signed a crappy deal. Here are all the details we're not supposed to give you. And we hate it. What? 5:16. Is Stefan joining us for this segment? Is he going to be able to get up here? I know they've a little short staff downstairs.
I'm not entirely sure if he's on quite yet, but that is the ultimate goal for this morning.
All right.
I'll let you know.
And I thought PJ was coming back today.
I believe it's tomorrow he comes back. Connor, correct me if I'm wrong there.
Yeah, Bill, you got one more day with me. PJ will be back tomorrow.
Oh, he's one of those guys. I never do that. And every time others do it, I think, well, that's what I should do with my vacation. A week and a day. Because you get then the extra day off, sure. But then you're only back 4 days.
And you get to miss Mondays.
Back on vacation. And everybody hates Mondays.
Right?
That's really worth it. I don't know if you traveled or whatever. But if you travel too, a lot of times you come back on a Sunday and you're just exhausted on Monday coming back to work.
Okay, well, I won't have time to record the fight.
Hi, Stefan. We hear you down there, Stefan. He's chatting to somebody, but not us.
He had to step away quickly. I'm not sure if he will be joining us.
Okay.
A little discombobulated this morning, trying to figure it all out here.
Scrambling.
Correct.
Because I guess they had an unplanned day off downstairs with someone. So.
Yes. Somebody wasn't thinking ahead for that.
He wasn't what? Sorry?
Somebody wasn't thinking ahead for that extra day missing the Monday and just happened to miss it by accident.
Yep. Ah, okay. Well, this is the problem when we have to rely on a whole other show, right?
Yep.
Just you and me, Katie. We'll be absolutely fine.
The dream team.
Is Holsky in the newsroom today?
No, not even Holsky. Holsky's on vacation for a little bit.
Am I going to be reading the news?
Sorry?
It's going to come to that one day, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Bill? Hello, Bill.
Stefan, you are here.
I am here, buddy. I wouldn't leave you hanging like that.
What's that?
I wouldn't leave you hanging like that. There's some technical stuff going on.
Oh.
I wasn't patched in right away. That's all.
Yeah, we were hearing you. I think we weren't patched into you, maybe. Because we've been talking to you, and you've been doing whatever it is you do it down there.
Whatever I do.
We heard you say, I want to have time to record something. And we're like, what's he not have time to record? What's he doing? Yeah. Were you watching the press conference live last night from the education minister and the UP's Ontario Board Council of Unions head?
I didn't watch it live. I was catching up this morning.
Because it's not the same.
No.
You had to be watching it in real time to see just how much she hated this deal. It was so confusing. The membership must be scratching their heads going, so why did the union agree to this deal? Why are we voting on it if they don't like it?
Oh, yeah. No, they hate it.
Hate is not even a strong enough word. They hate this deal that they've agreed to.
Yeah. I think that's always to put into perspective for people, though, is that some of their members, remember, they're fighting for members who are relying on the food bank, can't make ends meet. They can't afford to be on strike. They can't.
Yeah, and these are the same members the government offered a bigger wage to, the lower, and they, the union wouldn't take it.
Right. So they couldn't afford to be on strike. A lot of them will follow the lead of their union. They don't have a choice. But when other Ontarians that don't belong to this group are criticizing everything that's taking place, you have to remember that these lower wage workers cannot be on the picket line for weeks on end. It will destroy them ultimately. So the union must
especially
have been
when
like,
they know there's a really good financial offer on the table.
Right. The union must be looking at me like, okay, we have to cave because some of our members are going to be upset because strike pay is not the pay they typically receive.
Yeah, there's also a report out there, Stefan, that says the other unions that had their back a couple of weeks ago were putting a lot of pressure on them. What are you doing? This is a lot of money you're turning down.
Yeah.
They had trouble saying yes a week ago. But I think they realized, you're right, they don't have the support of other unions. A lot of their membership thought that wage increase sounded pretty damn good under the circumstances. Could we just keep working, please?
Right.
That's going to be your big story this morning. Is there really any time for any other?
Right? This impacts so many families. And then everyone said, you know, the kids are in the middle of this. So, yeah, this is going to be our big story today. You know, we were not in the Grey Cup runoff this time around. But, of course, we'll mention that the Toronto Argonauts held off the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in Regina yesterday. So there's the Grey Cup stuff going on.
I watched soccer yesterday.
Oh, yes. Day one World Cup.
Yeah, the home team lost for the first time.
I know.
Ever.
It's an early out for Qatar.
Well, they were never a good team, though. It was one of those. You're in it because you're hosting it.
That's right.
But usually that goes better for the host team. But it was not even close. Like, it never, they were never threatening. So it was kind of a boring game. Mm-hmm. So, not for me, kind of not a great start to the World Cup.
No.
But our soccer star says he's ready to play in game one. The team is not so convinced that he's ready to play by the sounds of it, but I hope he does play.
Yeah, I'm excited for the World Cup.
It's Wednesday is the first game, right, for Canada?
That's right, yeah.
Yep. In the afternoon, which is great for me.
And us, great for us.
Yep.
Still get to bed at a decent hour.
We'll have a little nap. We'll wake up. We'll watch the World Cup game. Canada will probably lose to Belgium because they're actually the World Cup favorite. So they didn't draw into a good section.
No.
Got some tough teams to play. Rosie's shaking her head as well. No, no, we did not.
It's a real tough draw. somebody's playing musical mics with me here. Did you see that, Bill?
Yeah, somebody shifted the mics to different positions.
Okay, let's put that one over here. Can you imagine at 5:45 in the morning, they're putting like three mics in my face?
You have to understand, from the middle of the desk, these microphone stands come out like big spider's legs in every direction. And you can actually stretch them and shift them to different places on the desk. But there's a microphone at your position. You turn on the mic, and the other mic came on because somebody moved it. It was pretty funny. You looked very confused there.
Yeah, playing musical mics. I was like, why can't I hear myself? What's happening?
Stefan, I'll let you go and get ready for your other show.
Okay, thanks, boss.
And I'll talk to you on TV later. I think we know what we'll talk about, right?
I think so. Chat soon, Bill.
Okay, we don't have to scratch our heads and say, what's our comment going to be on TV this morning?
What are we going to talk about? Bill, why can't I get my Wi-Fi working on this company phone? This is so annoying.
I don't know, Katie. Is the Wi-Fi working in the room?
It is, because my other phone. You know I got two phones. You know I have two cell phones.
I know. You're very important.
Yeah. Like, I juggle the two. My personal phone working no problem, picking up the Wi-Fi. The company phone, I'm not getting anything, and it's
my company
very
phone. I have two as well.
Okay.
I rarely carry the company phone because it weighs 12 pounds. Remember when really big phones were in style for a while? Those are the ones Bell gave us.
Yeah, like, and I remember...
Well, this is the original four.
You remember when they made... I think they still do, right? The new phones, they come out, and then there's a bigger version. And, so you have a big screen. So, and at first, it was like, I'm going to get the bigger version so I look important, and I've got the bigger screen. And everybody was like, wait, what?
Why do I need like you're holding an iPad up to your face.
Exactly. Why do I need a TV in my pocket? Just give me a phone. Just give me a phone, for crying out loud. So...
Well, I don't have the Wi-Fi answer for you. The Wi-Fi in that room's always been a bit spotty, but
yeah, a little sketchy.
There's a new operating system. Have you downloaded it?
I have. Don't like the clock, the way it looks.
Mine is set on automatically download.
Yes.
And then it never does.
Then you have to do it. Like, it'll
always end up having to do it manually.
And then when the new iOS would come out and they'd say, okay, download it. At first I was like, wait a minute, should I? And then I realized I understand like the importance of downloading that sucker as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I sometimes like to wait a day or two and just see what went wrong with your phone before I start to, right? Because there's an update and then there are three or four fixes that always come out.
Then there's another fix or something. Yeah.
I like to avoid the fix stage.
I hear you on that. I hear you on that.
Hey. Wow, it was really winter-like.
Oh, wow. Did you...
We were in Brockville for a hockey tournament.
Oh, right.
And it just caught the... Remember we were talking on Friday how much of the edge is it going to catch?
Yep.
And it didn't get the Buffalo kind of snowfall by any stretch.
No, it didn't.
But you know what's really incredible about it? And I knew from the weather radar. At one point, they closed the 401.
Yep.
So we're just trying to go from Brockville to the 416. It's not a long stretch. But you could see on the traffic app, it was just red line, right? It was just red. Everything was jammed.
Slow.
We went maybe 10 kilometers north.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful fall day.
Amazing, right?
Like nothing.
Yes.
So 10 minutes of driving in pretty tricky weather.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the trip back to Manotick was fine.
Oh, good.
And then we arrived in Manitic, and then sort of caught up with us here a little bit. I mean, again, Buffalo really did that. There were some places that got almost 7 feet.
Remarkable. When you think some places got over 2 meters, so yeah. 7 feet, 2 meters, what? That's absolutely remarkable. And
even
historic.
For Buffalo.
Even for that's Buffalo. Even for Buffalo. I mean, ahead of this snow machine, they were just calling for a state of emergency, locking things down and say, stay home, stay off the roads. That was on Friday. And they were right to do that because the amount of snow is just tremendous.
It really is like a snow machine on a ski resort.
Yeah.
Because the moisture just is coming up into the air.
Yep.
And just being turned into snow.
Yep. And
but it doesn't cool off over. It's warm over the lake.
Yes.
So it's still just moisture, like clouds. But the minute it goes over land, the moisture freezes and falls as snow.
And then it falls as snow.
And it just keeps happening and over and over and grinding out. It was, and some of the videos of the first snow wall that came in, it looked like you were in the middle of a desert in a sandstorm. You could just see it coming.
Yeah. It was quite something. It's enough to possibly keep many people, even a certain radio announcer, from complaining when it snows here?
Nope. Still going to complain. Still going to complain. It can't help Buffalo real estate prices, though.
That's rough.
God, just when I was thinking of moving to Buffalo.
Just when you were thinking.
Because the Bills are really good this season.
Oh, gosh. I tell you. But we're okay. But listen, it was blustery yesterday. Super windy. Super cold. We got another cold one today, but not as windy. And we'll get some scattered flurries.
Yesterday was a mid-January day.
That's
how it felt.
It was, you needed to be dressed properly.
Yeah, the wind chill was like below minus 10, minus 11.
Yeah, exactly. Put on the big boots, heavy, heavy gloves, and the big parka, and then you're okay.
Never left the house yesterday.
You didn't even leave the house.
Nope. Had to drive in it in the morning, and then once we were home,
right.
That's
once
it,
you got home, there. Listen, I'm glad that
Well, we
you
were
made
praying for them to lose so they wouldn't have to come back for a Sunday game.
No, you
is
did
that wrong?
Not. No, you did not.
Yeah, I did.
You did not want your son's team to lose.
I was cheering for the other team.
Did you tell your son? Does he know this? Can I get his number and call him and tell
him this? There's no need for him to know this. He probably, when they scored, the other team scored the winning goal, and he heard me jump up and go, yes! He probably knew something was.
It's like, Dad, come on. We're trying to play here. We're trying to win.
I felt bad because there's always like a lunch after the game. There were two games in the morning.
Yes.
And by then it was clear they were not going to be playing the next day, but we were in the restaurant parking lot and I was looking at weather radar and I said to Sylvie, our window is right now.
Yeah.
Well, we should go and eat. I'm like, no, by the time we order and eat,
yep.
It's going to get even worse. Our window is right now. I want to leave right now. We sort of had, we don't argue much. We had a little snippy kind of, because we also had two cars because I drove him earlier
okay.
And then she joined us later and like, I just don't want to be here for this. The car is getting buried in snow every second. I want to get out of here. And we heard from people who stayed for lunch that the 401 had then closed.
Good on you, Bill.
I know how to read the weather radar.
You are on it. There's no doubt about it. And also, you're a bit of a homebody. So,
Also, I just wanted to go home, yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. I don't know these parents.
You're like, I can eat some food at home.
No, it would have been fun to stay, but. At some point, it wasn't going to be safe to drive. I mean, and it was sort of icy snow at that point, too, so it was really slippery.
Well, we were talking about this on Friday. We're like, on the 401 along the Seaway, that's where you do not want to be.
And that's exactly where we went.
Friday and Saturday, and then you were there. So
I
understand your concern. Glad everybody made it home. And you'll take the dogs out today.
Maybe. I might leave the house today.
You might leave the house today.
That one's a possibility.
There you go.
Slim, but there's some there. It's the Morning Rush Morning Meeting live at 5.
It's the Morning Rush live at 5.
So, okay, let me take a guess. Either American Music Awards, maybe this isn't really a guess because I'm putting in two. I'm hedging here. American Music Awards or Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde's breakup.
You know what? I wish I had gone with Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde breakup. But no, I went with the American Music Awards.
I think that's probably more trending this morning anyway.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal. A lot of, you know, famous people in one room trying to talk music and getting out there and putting on a face and showing up. I think it is a pretty big deal. There was one in particular moment of last night that really stood out to me.
Did it involve Taylor Swift?
No.
Then let's hear about it.
Thank you very much. I know we've been talking about Taylor Swift just a little bit too much recently, in my opinion, but she is trending pretty much all the time. Chris Brown actually won an award at the American Music Awards last night, and there was audible boos coming from the audience and everywhere in the Microsoft Theater.
And the American Music Award goes to Chris Brown.
People were outraged. They were getting up. They were causing a scene. And Kelly Rowland, who was the one announcing the award, and the award was for Favorite Male R&B Artist. She had to tell people to chill out, calm down. We have the rest of the clip later on today when we do trending. And I just think it's interesting how he is still such a dirty, bad word when it comes to the music industry. And how, you know, this happened a long time ago, Rihanna and Chris Brown, which is where most of this might be coming from, because they had a bit of a lash out and some tension going on about some domestic abuse.
I don't know if it was very mutual.
Yeah, I know. It depends on who you ask.
Her.
Well, and I agree, and I believe Rihanna, absolutely. But some people,
so
it
do
depends.
You want, if you're, who is it, Kelly Rowland?
Rowland, yeah.
Is Chris Brown the guy you want to stand up for, though?
And she did.
But
and
why?
She did.
I would just be like, no, okay, leave that alone.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. He was also supposed to perform at the American Music Awards last night to do a tribute to Michael Jackson, and was told 2 days prior that he was not coming, we're canceling it, and he'd already rehearsed, spent so much time doing all of the choreography, and said, yep, no, we don't want you to come.
So what
Cancel
do you think
it.
The AMAs just thought it all passed and no one would care anymore?
Yeah, I guess. And then maybe it got out.
I'm sort of glad people have longer memories on this stuff.
Me too. And it's weird that he's still winning awards and all this kind of stuff coming out. I'm not entirely sure, but I was doing some research on it, of course, for trending. And some articles were like, enough is enough. We got to let Chris Brown back. And I'm like, what? It's such a torn thing. I'm seeing all over some people on Twitter.
Well, I think there's a difference between let the guy live his life now, and if you feel he's been punished enough, and celebrating him.
Exactly.
Right? That's the difference. So, if I'm at the American Music Awards and he wins the award, I wouldn't even clap my hands.
Yeah. Some silence.
Maybe I wouldn't boo. I don't know. But people booed. They booed. That's on him. He brought that on himself.
Absolutely.
And I don't think it looks good for Kelly Rowland to be defending him.
No, and we have more audio of that earlier, because she backs him up huge.
Oh, I'd be interested to see how that trends today. If she faces a backlash.
Yeah, if she's get throwing on the burner too, yeah.
All right, that's coming up 2 hours from now. Let's wrap up our meeting here and get going. It's been the Morning Rush Morning Meeting. We're live at 5, Monday to Friday. Tell your friends. 6 o'clock news coming right up.
Good morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Great news if you're a parent, huh? Especially if you didn't have daycare plans. You were thinking there might be a strike this morning. What a relief yesterday when, shortly after the 5 o'clock deadline, the Education Minister, Stephen Lecce, came out and said this.
We are grateful to all the parties for working with the government. We've been very clear in what will guide us every day. Kids deserve to be in class, and I'm proud to confirm they will be.
Now, that was pretty standard stuff from management side. He came out and said they'd reached a deal, that every side got something they wanted and left a little bit disappointed, and he wasn't going to tell us more because he's not supposed to. Now, it's a bit of a silly rule, because what happens is the membership is supposed to see the ratified deal, or not the ratified deal, the tentative deal first. And then they get to vote on it. But of course, it always leaks out But still, he was being professional, and he's not going to be the first guy to leak out the details. Not true with Laura Walton, president of QP's Ontario School Board Council of Unions. She told us just about all of the details. She said they agreed to this tentative agreement, but then it was pretty clear she hates it. It was bizarre.
I think it falls short. I think it's terrible that we live in a world that doesn't see the need to provide services to kids that they need. But we will always put workers first. We will always put our students first. And that's why there will not be a strike tomorrow.
But it's the same deal that was on the table a week ago when she told us that we're going to go on strike today if it didn't improve. So what happened there? It's very confusing. There's a lot of stuff starting to come out, some media reports about what was going on within the bargaining committee, the disagreements that other unions who'd backed them a couple of weeks ago when they were going to go on strike. Remember at the time I said it, these other unions are weighing in like they care about education assistance. They don't. They're only thinking about their own future. We can't allow a government to be this tough on us in the future. We can't. We got to stand and fight right now. They were fighting for themselves because the minute they're no longer fighting for themselves, okay, well, the government pulled this legislation off the table. No notwithstanding clause. We're good. They walked away. And from what I hear, they were looking at this deal in front of QP and going, why are you saying no to this? This is an unbelievable deal. The government has come to the table with a huge financial offer here. Learn to say yes. Some people don't know how to win. I think Laura Walton is one of those people. Does not know how to win. She looks like she wanted to stay in the fight. You could tell the media was confused by it. Probably took a little longer for them to figure it out than it did the average person watching at home. Because even my kids were saying, well, I don't understand why she doesn't like it. She sounds like she's telling the workers to not vote for it. Yeah, she was. And the media was a little slow picking up on it, but then you could hear the questions. Now, actually, in fairness to the media, you get your turn to talk. So they may have been sitting in the background. They can't get on yet, going, what the hell is she going on about? But by the time they got to the second or third question, you could hear the confusion. So you sound like you don't like this deal. Yeah, don't like it. Sound like you hate it. But she was asked for clarification. So are you recommending that your workers sign off on this? And she seemed to say, yes, because that's what I'm supposed to do. But you could tell she's hoping they say no to the deal. I don't think they will. I don't think they will. I think that while they were arguing for future positions and education assistance in every kindergarten class and all those things, the average worker is thinking, look, that's not my fight. That is not my fight. Just pay me enough that I can live my life, do my job, be happy in it. There are a lot of education workers who are happy to have part-time work. Of course, who doesn't want more money? But they didn't want to go on strike over that. Because if you're as poor as the union makes them out to be, you can't afford to strike. Union strike pay is not going to make up the difference. So I would be shocked if union members don't accept this deal. But their leadership clearly doesn't want them to take it. You didn't hear that message from her last night. You really were not paying attention. Now, maybe you'll see media versions of it that will make you think, oh, well, I guess she's happy with it. But if you watched, she was clearly not happy at all. Now, someone explain to me what's going on with the Green Party. Is Elizabeth May, did she run for high school co-president? What is that? There's no co-leadership in politics. I am shaking my head at this. This cannot even be true. Elizabeth May is back as leader of the Green Party of Canada. Sort of. That party's dead in the water, huh? They should just accept that fact. But she ran on a promise to share the role with Jonathan Pedneau. They're going to try to amend the party's constitution to allow for an official high school-like co-leadership model. In her victory speech... Is it a victory speech when you're the co? I don't know. In her co-victory speech on Saturday, she explained what that high school-like model is going to mean for the party.
It means a different model for leadership that emphasizes that Greens do things differently. We don't have a top-down leader, a boss, who tells people what to say or where to go or how to vote. Jamais. We have a distributed model of leadership, and Jonathan and I believe that our values are better reflected in co-leadership.
Yeah, you know when you're going to be the prime minister? Jamais. Come on. The co-leadership. It's called leadership. We're not going to tell you what to do or try to run the party. It's not going to be top down. Well, why have a leader at all? Is having two of them make that work better? How are they going to get anything done? Wow, that's just sad. That really is. I guess she felt dragged back, maybe, but doesn't want to spend all that time and energy on it. Doesn't want to be the only part. But, you know, I used to say on my shows, when everyone else would say Green Party leader Elizabeth May, I'd just say Green Party Elizabeth May, because she was the Green Party. Now there are two of them. So at least it's a real party, I guess. Are they going to share a seat in the House of Commons? We're going to be co-members of Parliament. We'd like to change Canada's constitution to allow that to happen. I mean, the whole thing just sounds kind of like madness. Speaking of madness, Donald Trump can come back to Twitter if he chooses. I didn't check this morning. Can you check, Katie? Is he back on Twitter? Elon Musk took a vote. And 51% or something. It was a very narrow victory. But the slight majority of Americans on Twitter said, yeah, give him his account back. But Trump says he might not return to Twitter because of all the turmoil surrounding Musk's recent acquisition of the platform.
I don't see any reason for it. They have a lot of problems at Twitter. You see what's going on. It may make it. It may not make it.
Yeah, it may or may not make it. Most Republicans seem happy about Elon Musk taking over Twitter. So I was surprised that that was his response. Listen, if Twitter survives, he's going to be back on it. He's not going to be able to resist. I know he has his own social media platform, but do you even remember what it's called? I mean, it's not a huge success. He wants to get his message out. If he actually wants to be president, he's going to be back on Twitter. If it's around, he's going to be back on Twitter. You can pretty much count on that. And by the way, before you send me texts, I was never in favor of stopping any president of the United States from using Twitter. I don't care what the president of the United States or any other world leader says. We have to know what that message is, unless they're not a leader of a democratic country. But he was the president of the United States. What he says means something. Even if it's crazy, we have an absolute right to know that. Now, private citizen Donald Trump, you want to take him off Twitter, which is what he's been recently, that's fine. I'm not sure you can even take a candidate off, but, you know, I guess anyone can run for president. Actually, becoming president's a different matter. I wouldn't count him out, but, yeah, I thought it's wrong to silence a country's leader just because you don't like what they have to say. Even if it's outright hateful, we have a right to know who's in charge. 6:15, the morning rush. Good morning. I'm not the co-host, although some people are acting like Katie's the new co-host of the show. I noticed that. We could get a lot of texts on that. Maybe Donald Trump can run for co-president. Elizabeth May, what are you doing? Just disband the party already. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
Listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
6:24, she didn't answer the phone, but we'll still give her the $1,000. Yesterday's Bingoland Gaming Center Grand in Your Hand winner is Ida McHale. Congratulations to you. If you know her and you want to wake her up and tell her the good news, feel free. Good luck. We couldn't wake her up, but perhaps you can. That's great. Are we doing more clues this week, or are we wrapping that up?
We got some clues going on, yep.
Excellent. So 7 and 8 o'clock hour, we'll give you a code word, which you can enter to try to win $1,000 for yourself. Plus, we have the $1,000 minute coming up. Just looking down my list here, actually, while I'm here. Do I have anything else to give away today? We have
we've been giving away a lot
of Sens tickets and music tickets, and we've been very generous. I think my prize closet looks a little empty today, though.
Correct.
We'll get it restocked for later. Hey, some great news for Canada from the World Cup. Alfonso Davies says he is good to go. Remember Alfonso Davies in some of those run-up games? he was watching at home because he had COVID-19 and it led to some minor heart issues, and he was cheering from home. Great videos of him getting excited while his colleagues were scoring goals and playing so well. And then the World Cup arrives, and he's sidelined with a hamstring strain. But he says he's ready to play. Here's the problem. Here's the problem. The team is not being quite so clear about it. This is one of his fellow players, midfielder Jonathan Osorio, who welcomed the teammates' positive words, though.
If he's saying he's ready to go, you know, we'll see what the medical staff, when they examine him along with the coaching staff, and they'll decide. In the end, they decide along with Alfonso if he's ready to go. But of course, him saying that is a huge positive for us.
Canadian forward Jonathan David agrees. That's a good sign.
Of course, it's a big boost because we know how important of a player he is for us and what he brings to the team. So, of course, if he's 100%, we're all happy.
So, why is he saying he's ready to play, but we're holding back his team? Here's the thing. The team's medical staff haven't cleared him yet. So he says he's ready to play. But with a hamstring injury, you know, it just takes one sprint when you're a little bit cold. You ever pulled a hamstring? I have. Ooh, that's painful and not fun. It takes weeks for it to get better. I'm not sure the coaching staff is going to let him play. This seemed to be their logic. Okay, the three teams they're playing in their division are all excellent. It will take almost a miracle for them to. I think they need probably a win and a tie to get through to the next round. They have to beat Belgium, who is favored to win the whole thing. They're the FIFA World Cup favorites. Croatia, they were in the final, if I'm remembering correctly, 4 years ago. And then Morocco, who's considered the best team in Africa. Morocco, maybe they've been playing against a lot of other teams that are not the highest quality, so maybe they're ranked a little higher is what the soccer experts are saying. I don't want to make it sound like it's me because I'm not a big enough expert, but the soccer experts are saying, yeah, they're probably not quite as good as they look in the rankings. Canada has a shot to upset them. So a victory there and then at least a tie against two of the best teams on the planet, that's a tall order. But it sounds like the coaching staff is thinking, look, we're probably not going to beat Belgium. So we hold Alfonso out of that game. Why get him hurt if we can't win anyway? And then save him for the two games we have a shot at. The problem with that would be, imagine if you play well against them and you lose by a goal and you realize Alfonso Davies could have been the difference maker here. I don't know. I think if he's fit, you got to go all in. You got to assume you have a chance of winning every single game. Maybe Belgium comes out a little cold. They take Canada for granted. They play down to their opponent. I don't know. You got to play the games to win. So we'll see. Well, we should know in the next, we may know today what they're going to do. I think they'll hold off till the last minute, but the game is Wednesday afternoon, 2:00, I think, Eastern time, if you want to watch it. And who isn't going to watch that one, right? I think the whole country is going to be watching. A lot of people who claim to be working from home, like the federal government, will be shut down. Nobody's making up passport applications at home during this game. Don't kid yourself. 6:29, the morning rush.
And now, Bill's best binges.
I'm already cooked.
What will you be watching?
I have a great, short, easy binge watch for you. Three episodes. That's all. Three episodes. It looks to be a one-off. I don't know how you could do a second season of this. What you have here, I think, is an excellent movie that was just probably too long to be a movie. So it becomes a three-part series. Each part is, you know, pretty long, 60 to 90 minutes. But this one is really well done. I mean, and it you are going to be so stressed watching this show at times. You're going to love me for this one, okay? It's a British TV serial, and it's available, by the way, on BritBox. And no, PJ, if you're listening at home, no, it is not a police procedural, okay? Many of the actors in it have been in police procedurals. But this is not another Brit. This is on BritBox. It's called Crossfire.
Why didn't I appreciate ordinary life? How could I not have realized how fragile it all was? All this time, you thought you were choosing your life. But actually, you were just heading towards that moment. If only I'd known. It was always going to end like this.
Always going to end like what? What is going on? That's the voice of Keely Hawks. You would know her if you watched anything on BritBox or British TV before. She played the politician who was being guarded in the series Bodyguard, which was top-notch excellent. I saw her the first time in the Spy series, also not a British police procedural, the Spy series Spooks, which they had a different name in the U.S. What was it called in the U.S.? Can you just quickly look that one up for me? Because the word spook in the U.S. has a different connotation. Spook is a spy. But they so I just want to get the name right because it's a great series too. But it was not marketed as Spooks in North America. She was also in Line of Duty, where they look for bent coppers. Sort of a police procedural, but with a twist, right? Police investigating other police. So anyway, you will know her face. My buddy Chuck says, there are only 12 actors in Britain, and they're all really good. And they've all been Doctor Who at least once. I don't know if she's been Doctor Who. But yeah, you will recognize a lot of the faces, if not the names here. But okay, so she plays a woman who takes her family on a holiday in the Canary Islands, Hotel Barranco Tropical, beautiful resort. She goes at her time when her marriage is falling apart. So it's a tense time for the family. And it may look like this is a story, it's kind of a failed romance story. And that's sort of what it sets out to be until she's, I don't think I'm giving much away here. This is very early on in episode one. She's on her phone and she seems to be texting someone in a very provocative way. Is that her husband who's not in the room with her, or is it someone else? Does she have a lover? So that's where you think this is headed, right? It's a woman having an affair, her family's on the verge of breaking up until you hear gunshots from the pool. And at that moment, it takes a sinister turn. This is a series about a terrorist attack on a hotel. And Joe Cross, played by Keely Hawks, is a security consultant and former police officer who's forced into Bruce Willis-like action. And from that moment on, it becomes really tense and really exciting, very dramatic. But in the British kind of way, there are long moments where there's things are calm and quiet, and actually that just builds up the terror even more. So it does something I don't usually like in TV shows or movies. It jumps back and forth in time a lot. You know, how did we get to this moment? But I think it's handled very well here because there's a voiceover where she explains how time seemed to melt into past, present, and future at that moment. Let me give you an example of how well they tell the story. When she first hears the gunshot, her only thought is, my kids are by the pool, I got to go get them. And it takes an eternity for her to put on her running shoes because she's thinking, flip-flops are not going to work. I'm going to have to run. So you get an insight into her thinking. She's already thinking like a cop or a security consultant that I'm about to be in a conflict. I'm not just in, she's in a panic. Yes, she wants to get to her kids right away. But it's a thoughtful panic. And that attitude is set up from the beginning and lasts all the way through. Really great series. BritBox. It's called Crossfire. 3 episodes. You're going to love them.
Is Spook's other name MI5? Does that ring a bell? Yeah.
Yeah.
And is it Keely Hawes or Hawks? I'm looking, I have Hawes here.
Might be Hawes. Yeah, you might be right about that. Hawes. Yeah, yeah, there's no K. But probably best known for the series Bodyguard, which was a big hit in North America as the politician. She's just one of those beautiful middle-aged women who can really act and can play anything. Right? She can look like the tired woman next door or as glamorous and as beautiful as you need her to be. And she plays the roles really well. Yeah, great talent in that country. Annika Rose is on it. I know her from Shetland. She was in it for a couple of seasons. And there are a few others whose faces I just know, and I can't tell you where exactly from. But all right, what do you have? Come on, you can't beat that, Crossfire.
Sadly, I am falling short. I watched a lot of movies this weekend. Shout out to Richard Krause for recommending that musical that you did not want to watch, Spirited, with Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell. Amazing. Loved it loads. But I know...
You like musicals.
I love it. I love it. And Ryan Reynolds singing and dancing. Come on. Come on. It was amazing. But I know Connor has something, so I asked him to grab a trailer so he could talk about his best binge for this week.
Yeah, Bill. I'm all over these TV shows. I try to keep up to date. And I'm not a huge Lord of the Rings fan, but did you hear about this show coming out? It just finished, called Rings of Power.
My brother gave his life hunting the enemy. His task is now mine, not fate, nor destiny. Ours was the work of something greater.
Each of us, every one, must decide who we shall be.
So, Rings of Power, it's a Lord of the Rings show. It takes place about like 1,000 years or thousands of years before the original series. The big hype going into the season was that the creators spent, well, it was created by Amazon, and they spent over $1 billion making this show, which is insane. But
it should look good for that price.
Exactly. So it looks beautiful. The acting's great. The cinematography is crazy. But it was kind of boring to start, to be honest. It feels like they tried to have a lot going on, and I found myself, I think it was episode 3, I was sitting alone in my living room and I said out loud to the TV, you gotta hook me. You gotta hook me on this episode. I was not really feeling it. But by the end, I was really into it. Some great action. Marfried Clark, I hadn't seen her in anything before. She plays the main character Galadriel, who's also in the original Lord of the Rings shows and our movies, I guess. And she was great. So some good acting in there. Episodes are all over an hour long. So it does become a bit of a marathon to get through them all. But it was a good time. Some beautiful cinematography, some great action. I'd recommend it for a Lord of the Rings fan for sure.
So what's it called?
It's called Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power. It's on Amazon Prime.
All right. Not the best sales pitch.
No,
you made
no.
It sound like a bit of a chore, but...
You know, Bill,
on the weekend, my kids convinced me to watch episode 1 of House of Dragon.
Yes.
They love it. They want to hook us on it.
Absolutely.
First of all, wow, that's pretty sexual, but I guess they're old enough now, right? 17. Okay. Whew. Watching that with your kids, turn away. But,
you watched it even though you hate dragons, Bill?
Exactly. But I love my kids.
I'm proud of you.
But I got to tell you, it's so difficult to try to keep up with who's who and who's related to who and who's in whose camp. It's just too convoluted.
Bill,
man,
I'm like
you need a notepad with you.
I'm a massive fan of House of the Dragon, huge Game of Thrones nerd, and I got my family watching it. I definitely had to pause a couple episodes and explain what was going on, who was who.
But I got to tell you, I liked it more than I thought I would. Now, that's a low bar. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll. Once again, I learned on the weekend why my Google medical degree is not as good as Dr. Dworkin's actual medical degree. Keeping in mind patient confidentiality here, of course, Don.
Yes, yes.
A friend sent me a video of their baby, and I looked at it and thought, wow, you know, the question was, you think I should go to CHEO? And I looked and thought, watching this little baby's belly coming in and out and the fast breathing, it was terrifying. And this turned out to be a patient of yours, and you were not as panicked. I mean, you knew the child needed some treatment, but it wasn't time to rush off to CHEO. And of course, ultimately, it was the weekend past, it turns out you actually know what you're talking about. So,
wow, that's a relief.
So, no, but I thought it'd be valuable because so many parents are asking this question right now about when is it time. We know that the emergency rooms are packed and you're going to be there maybe for a long time and you don't want to infect other kids. Like, how do you know when a child who's having trouble breathing and coughing, sneezing, runny nose, all those other symptoms of RSV, when is it time to say, okay, I got to get in the car or I got to call an ambulance?
So what you're trying to do is you're trying to, RSV can cause what's known as respiratory obstruction, meaning that it narrows the airways within the chest, and it's a lower respiratory tract infection, meaning that it goes deeper into the lungs as opposed to cold viruses, which stay sort of in the upper chest area. And so what you're looking for are the physical signs that reflect the obstruction. So what do we mean by that? Well, there are lots of muscles that a child will use to try to breathe. One of them is called the diaphragm, and that's the big sort of dome-shaped muscle that is at the bottom of the rib cage. That's where where you see the stomach pop out on a baby when they're breathing, and that happens normally. That's the muscle just pulling down. So what you're looking for is when they are obstructed, they cannot get air into their lungs. And because of that, they're trying to suck air in and they can't. There's a lot of negative pressure, right? Negative pressure just means they're trying to draw air in. And because of that effort, you'll see four signs that usually act in concert. One is the abdomen. And again, we're talking about infants, right? So because it's children under the age of two, so infants and toddlers, children under the age of two that are most at risk of becoming obstructed because physically and anatomically, their airways are quite small. And so you're seeing the abdomen pop out and the chest sink in on a regular basis. Remember, children breathe, especially infants, breathe anywhere between 30 to 60 breaths per minute normally. So you're trying to first figure out if they're breathing faster than that. Secondly, you see the skin getting tugged in between the ribs, also the notch at the top of your breastbone. There's a little notch if you feel it just in your neck. The skin gets pulled in there and their nostrils will flare. And those things indicate that they're struggling to breathe. You'll also hear in infants grunting noises, right? And grunting noises is the sound of the baby having trouble breathing, right? They're grunting to try and keep air in their lungs, but they're breathing so fast that grunt is the result of them trying to hold the air, but then the air escapes. So those are some of the things that you look at when a child is having difficulty breathing. Other things too, the skin turns very dusky or bluish, because they're not able to get enough oxygen into their body. That's called cyanosis. And so they start to get more bluish tinges around their mouth or even on their body. Those are some of the things that if you see that happening, you would seek medical attention right away. Fever is another one. So if a child, again, is 3 months of age or less and they have a fever being defined as 38.5, 39, you seek medical attention. You don't necessarily have to go to CHEO. Again, if they have a fever, but they are not having difficulty breathing, you can at least call your physician or at least contact someone and find out what you need to do. But if they have that difficulty breathing and they have a fever, you go straight to CHEO. That you just don't want to wait with that. So there are nuances to that, and you can't expect parents to be able to figure out, Is this serious or is this minor?
Yeah, that's the difficulty, right? Because at some point, the child probably can cope well at home. Then there's another point where the child probably needs some help from medication. And then there's that extreme where I got to get to a hospital because this child is really struggling and is, turning blue, I guess, is probably a pretty good sign there. But in this particular case, you saw the belly coming up and down and higher than usual breathing. So this child is definitely sick and struggling and could be helped by medication, but you didn't think it had reached the next level. And it sounds like the difference is the upper chest wasn't being sucked in. It wasn't struggling as much as some kids when it gets really bad.
Yeah. So there's a few things, right? So when the child came in, you look at the chest and see what was happening. So the abdomen was popping out a bit, but the breathing rate was 54. So that's pretty much normal breathing rate. Skin color was normal, well hydrated. History was able to feed. And that's a key thing. If the baby, especially infants, they are obligate nose breathers. They prefer breathing through their nose. And so if they are obstructed and they're breathing very quickly, there's very little way that they can actually feed, right? Because they can't swallow and breathe at the same time. So they're going to get very irritable, and you'll see changes in behavior that way. They'll also become dehydrated. And so dehydration would be no saliva under their tongue. The eyes are dry. There's no tears. The skin is dry and not supple, not bouncy or rubbery feeling. So those are things. And the fontanelle, which is that soft spot on the top of the head, really sinks in. So there are things that you look at and didn't have any of those things. So that was okay. no fever, and as well, very interactive, right? Was able to make the baby laugh and smile. And so babies don't do that if they're not feeling very well. So, but the chest was a bit congested. So gave a medication to the baby to take for one day called dexamethasone. And that clears up the chest. It reduces the inflammation and keeps babies out of the hospital. So it worked out well. But you can't expect parents to do that. That's years and years of practice experience and stuff. So
you sure, try and to I make imagine it it's kind of like if you're a middle-aged guy and you're having chest pains, they always say, better to come to the ER than not. Like, okay. And if I had a 3 or 4 month old infant, I'm going to definitely err on the side of caution.
Yeah, you can't take a chance when they're 3 or 3 months old or less, or 3 or 4 months old, if they have a high fever and they're having a tough time breathing. And usually you can tell when a baby's having a tough time breathing and they're not feeding. You're going to get medical assistance. You can't keep them at home and just hope that it goes away.
Yeah. You're pretty good doctors, it turns out, Doc. Keep
well,
up the good
you.
Work.
Thanks.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, he actually paid attention to medical school. Medical Myth Busting, also host of Sunday House Call, Sunday afternoon at 3 on News Talk 580 CFRA.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Well, by now you know the kids are going to school, so that's the good news. I wouldn't hold my breath, though, expecting that this is going to pass. I don't know. I mean, this was bizarre yesterday. Let me set it up for you, but I want to explain that I'm hearing the sound bites and seeing the quotes this morning. If you were watching it live, the press conference yesterday when they announced this tentative agreement, you would have a very different impression than you're seeing kind of in general in the media. The union, or at least this one union leader, hates this deal, despises this deal. It just doesn't add up that they would even agree to it in the first place. It's pretty much the deal they turned down a week ago and offered another strike deadline. They threatened to strike over this very deal a week ago, and now suddenly, yeah, we've signed off on it. Now it goes to our membership for ratification. So let me just set it up a little bit here. Shortly after 5 o'clock yesterday, I'm sure many of you kind of stopped to see what was going on. And luckily for you, you don't get paid to do this. So you probably watched the announcement, maybe caught the first 2 minutes of the union's reaction, and then you went back to your Sunday. I had to suffer through the entire press conference to tell you what's really going on, and I'm glad I did because it was bizarre. The education minister, Stephen Lecce, came out and did exactly what you would expect him to do, especially him. He really sticks to his talking points. There's a deal here. It's good news. No matter how many times or different ways he was asked about details, he refused to give them. He kind of stuck to this. Just go with clip number one here, Connor, because it never really changed beyond clip number one.
We are grateful to all the parties for working with the government. We've been very clear in what will guide us every day. Kids deserve to be in class, and I'm proud to confirm they will be.
So what about the details? What happened on this issue or that issue? Look, the process dictates that I don't release the details right now. And so that is the professional thing to do. They almost always leak out pretty quickly anyway, because if you send the details of a contract to 50,000 people to ratify it, somebody's going to give it to their brother-in-law who works for Bell Media. I mean, it's just going to happen, right? But normally in the first few minutes afterwards, both sides say, you know, we'll respect the process. Nope, not Laura Walton, the president of CUPE's Ontario School Board Council of Unions. She said the vote will start on Thursday. Well, we'll play clip number four here because it sort of started out the way you would expect it.
Today, we've reached a tentative agreement with the provincial government and the Council of Trustees Associations. Workers will be in schools tomorrow and there will not be a strike.
Click, right? Back to the game. Click, back to Sunday night dinner, right? No. This is where it got weird because, remember, she just negotiated a settlement with the government. Play the next one.
I think it falls short. I think it's terrible that we live in a world that doesn't see the need to provide services to kids that they need. But we will always put workers first. We will always put our students first. And that's why there will not be a strike tomorrow.
Wait, what? You were ready to strike over this exact deal a week ago. How do I know this? Because you gave away all the details. In the next 10 minutes, you just spilled it all. And it was clear Laura Walton hates this deal, despises it. So why did she sign off on it? On the surface, it makes no sense. Brian Lilly is going to join us from Sun Media an hour from now. He's already written one column about this, and he's been sniffing around. He'll join us an hour from now. And what it looks like happened here is that members of her own union and certainly members of other unions that supported her had her back a couple of weeks ago on the constitutional issue and legislation. It sounds like a lot of those people looked at it and said, what are you doing? This is an amazing deal. A week ago, this is an amazing deal. Stop fighting to run the education system. Take this deal. You're not being reasonable. And to hear how angry she was, I thought to myself, how did they ever negotiate a deal with this woman? Like, how do you win? We're, okay, we want $100, I'll give you 50. We want $100, I'll give you 60. We want $100, I'll give you $100. Okay, then we want more than that. Whoa. She decided now she wants to, well, plus we want an education assistant in every kindergarten class, and we want this many workers. That's not her job. That's our job, because this is not a private company. We own the schools. We decide. I know you're not going to like to hear this, but this is how it works in a democracy. We are the ones who decide how many education assistants we hire. And we can argue all day about whether it should be one for every class or one for every two classes or one for every day. We can argue about, but that's our job. That's our job. We're the ones who are going to have to pay for it. That's our job. How do we do that? If you can't name your member of provincial parliament, I don't want to hear what your opinion is on how many education assistants there should be. You're not doing your job. That's how you elect a provincial government. They get to run education on our behalf. And I know you can't name your board trustee, your school board trustee. I know you can't. I know people don't even know. Does my tax money go to the Catholic board or the public board? I didn't know you could choose. I don't want to hear from you. That you're, yeah, I think the union's right about it. No. We run the education system. We decide. That is beyond the union's purview. And if I'm a union member, and they're always using the poorest members, right? Even though they wouldn't agree to give the poorest members a bigger raise, they wouldn't do that. No. We just don't do that. That's not something we do. That's what the union told me last week on this show. Not her, somebody else. You could tell he was not comfortable with it, huh? You could tell when I asked him. Shouldn't that be some, why is the union dictating how many? Well, a lot of people will say that's not our area. Yeah, that's right, because it's not. So he didn't forcefully disagree. Maybe he's one of the ones who were saying, can we just take this deal? It's really good. But this is a democracy. This is not a private company, a strike against a private company. It was a strike against us. You may not like management's decision, but you're management here. And it's your tax dollars that have to pay for it. We get to choose. I don't know they're going to ratify it, though, because every signal she sent was this was a crappy deal. But if you're, to go finish my point about it, you're one of the lowest paid workers that they kept using as an example, you can't afford a strike. You're going to look at this and go, well, it's good. I wish it could be even better. Wouldn't we all, right? I'm just going to take it. I'm not going on strike. So we'll see. We'll know by this time next week whether or not they ratify it. But for a union to say, we have reached a tentative agreement and it stinks, you've just asked for them to fire you as their leader. If it stinks, why did you agree to it? And if it's the same deal as last week and you now want me to vote on it, why couldn't I have voted on this last week? What have we been doing for the last week or so? I don't think members of this union have been very well represented, but ultimately, you know what? That's your democratic process. You can decide. 7:19, The Morning Rush. I want to get
This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Be a part of the conversation. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
Even though Steve Bunda, who's doing traffic this morning and does sideline reporting for our CFL games, even though he told me the Red Blacks were competitive this year, I didn't believe him. They were never going to be in the Grey Cup, and they weren't. Did you watch the Grey Cup yesterday? I don't know why they do it on Sundays up against the NFL. Makes no sense to me. Sorry, I'm watching the Bills game. But the Argonauts held off the Blue Bombers 24-23 in Grey Cup number 109 in Regina. The Argos led by a point late in the game when the Blue Bombers blocked a field goal attempt, but Toronto turned around and then did the same right back to the Blue Bombers. So it wasn't a dull finish. The Argos blocked Winnipeg's attempted field goal with less than a minute on the clock. They hung on to win. Argonauts head coach Ryan Dwindle says it was a wild way to win the CFL championship.
I mean, it's got to go down as one of the best finishes probably in Grey Cup history, I assume. No one hit the panic button. You know, they believed that we're going to find a way to get it done. They knew it was going to take a full 60 minutes, and to finish it like that, I mean, pretty unique.
Now we could turn our attention to actual football, where they kick the ball a lot more often. Yes, soccer. Everybody else in the world calls it football, but World Cup of Soccer, the FIFA World Cup, got underway yesterday. The home team in Qatar or Qatar or Gutter, however you want to pronounce it, so many different ways. They lost. First home team to lose the first game, but it was never close. 2-0 was the final score there. Who are they playing in? Ecuador. And, yeah, it was not the most exciting game, but it didn't matter. I was getting myself in the World Cup mood. Canada plays on Wednesday at 2 o'clock. The big question mark is, after the name of Alphonso Davies, our biggest star. This team has a couple of really, really good players, though. Well, they're all good players. It has a couple of stars. But Alphonso Davies, hands down, seems to be Canada's superstar. And he's sidelined right now by a hamstring strain. The question is, will he be ready for game one? He said yesterday on TSN that, yes, he is ready. But the team is not so sure. They're going, well, the medical staff will meet with him. We'll decide. There's a chance he could miss game one against Belgium, who are the World Cup favorites. And there seemed to be the thinking of the coach seemed to be, why waste him in a game we can't win? We got to win at least one game and get one tie to qualify for the next round. Let's save him for when it matters. You got to play in every game. I mean, who knows? Maybe Belgium will take us lightly and it could be a surprise upset. Imagine if they lose by a goal and Alphonso Davies was on the sidelines. It could have been there. I don't know. I don't know about that logic. But anyway, we should know. We'll know before Wednesday, that's for sure. 729, Brian Lilly of Sun Media might be able to explain what I just can't understand. Why does the union sign off on a deal it clearly hates? Or is Laura Walton the only one who hates it and everybody else around her loved it? I don't know, but Brian has been asking some questions and getting some answers. He's going to join us coming up next, The Morning Rush. Hold me close, I'm tired of
dancing. You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
I think it falls short. I think it's terrible that we live in a world that doesn't see the need to provide services to kids that they need. But we will always put workers first. We will always put our students first. And that's why there will not be a strike tomorrow.
Wait a second. So that's Laura Walton from CUPE. So you obviously hate this deal, but you don't want to go on strike because that's just wrong. Well, why wasn't that the logic 2 weeks ago when they had a one-day walkout? And why wasn't that the logic last week when they went back to negotiating and turned down this same offer and got a strike vote? Laura Walton is making zero sense to me. It was bizarre yesterday. Brian Lilly of Sun Media has been sniffing around this story all night. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. But last week as well, when I was hearing from union members, both inside CUPE, but also external union members who were questioning what Laura Walton was doing. And you saw, you heard it. There's another clip where she was asked quite bluntly. She was asked, you know, the province didn't provide any new services. That's correct. Yes. And why would you accept that? And Walton said, we heard very loudly from the members that they want to have their voice heard. And we are sending this in the most democratic fashion to the workers for their voice.
So the union turned on her, her members.
The union turned on her. Her own bargaining team turned on her. To put this in perspective, after the strike, or what Walton insists is not a strike but a political protest, the government came back with the most generous raise in wages that this union has seen in more than a decade. And she said no. They offered, by the union's own account, the union said it works out to an average of 3.59%. Now, if you've been getting 0, 1, 1.5 is a really good year in your contracts for more than a decade, and you get offered a four-year contract with an annual increase of 3.59%, compounded, that works out to 15.2% over 4 years. That's going to be your raise. And your union boss won't even let you look at the deal and vote on it because they want to push for something else that you don't really want to strike over just before Christmas. Yeah, you're going to turn. And so, as I said, it was rank and file members, which Walton admitted. I've been told that members of her own bargaining team were upset at her about her aggressive posture towards the government. You know, she won the PR battle. It wasn't a wash, but with the first strike, she won the PR battle. And I think she felt emboldened to say, fine, we're going to bring the Ford government to its knees now. And that just didn't happen.
So do you think the membership decided they didn't want to have a bigger fight about running? I mean, what I talked to one of the members of the bargaining committee last week, and I said, are you not overstepping here, though, by now deciding you're going to run the schools as well? How many people should be hired and how many teachers' assistants we need per classroom? Is that really your job? And he didn't strongly disagree with me. I could sort of feel like he said, some people think that's overstepping, but there was a but there for sure.
Yeah.
You think that's where the membership said, look, it's enough now. Where you fight for our rights, but don't fight for people who've yet to be even hired. I'm not going on strike for imaginary future workers.
And just before Christmas, for people who are consistently described as the lowest paid education workers in the province, it makes no sense. Look, unions will always push for this sort of thing, especially in the public sector. You know, I'm in a union, you know, the Toronto Sun's union can't turn around and tell the Sun, you've got to hire 10 more reporters. I can tell you that the Toronto Star is just ratifying, going through their deal. They're not telling the Star ownership, you've got to hire 10 more people in this department and five more here. You can't do that. Public sector, they'll try. Sometimes they'll get a bit of a win, but not as big as what QP was going for. I mean, remember, QP started with an ask of 11.7%, I think it was, each year. Each year. Plus, they wanted the workers to go from, if you were below 30 hours a week, you got made 35 hours a week paid minimal. If you were 35 and up, you got minimum 40 hours a week. So they really did want to take over management of the school boards. And the province said no. They said, we've given you a good wage offer. My guess is that the membership will take this because, as I said, you haven't seen these numbers in well over a decade. You've been getting 0, 1, 1.5 in a good year. So, yeah, they're going to vote for this. And I don't think that Laura Walton will be around after the next AGM for this division of QP. That would be my guess. Others in the labor sector, people at QP National, were putting pressure on her to say, stop with the strident nature. You're going to ruin a good thing. But there's
well, it was pretty clear watching that press conference yesterday. I thought to myself, boy, I don't know that that's someone you can negotiate with, because everything you've asked for, you're getting, and then you change the deal and you want even more. And then now she's signed off on the deal, but at the same time is telling her membership how terrible it is. It doesn't sound like a reasonable and professional way to do business.
No. And there was a win that the government got that hasn't been discussed very much. We don't have a ton of details, but there is an agreement between all the parties to start dealing with a third party on sick days. If you remember back at the beginning, QP kept saying the government wants to take away our sick days. And not entirely accurate, but the government did want to reduce how much sick days cost for the high-level absentee workers. So if you're in QP, I believe it's you get 11 sick days at full pay and then 120 at 90% pay through your short-term disability. And if it's not that exact number, it works out to 131 sick days. The government had wanted to change at a certain point, drop it from 90% down to, say, 60% to try and edge people back into the workforce. And the union had always said, no, we need our sick days.
Well, would you rush back at 90 or 80% even?
No. So they're going what looks to me like a direction that the federal government was able to get several years ago. I think it was under the Harper government, where they're bringing in a third-party group to manage people who are on short-term disability so that they get the services they need. So if you're, you know, and this does two things. There's always groups of people, right? There's going to be those who are genuinely sick and won't be able to come back, those who are genuinely sick, don't know how to navigate the system to get the care they need, and then people abusing the system. And we all know that there are people in every workforce like that.
Oh, yeah.
This takes the people.
They show up for work, you don't recognize them. Like, oh, you're not sick today.
Yeah, so this takes the people who don't know how to manage the system and, oh, you need physio? Let me make you an appointment. Let me help you. It's that type of case management. And so for people who just don't know how to navigate, that helps them. And for people who just want to abuse the system, it makes life difficult for them to continue to just abuse the system and put all the pressure on the people that do show up for work. So that's a win for the government. I'm told it'll save hundreds of millions, perhaps more than $600 million moving to this sort of system. And, you know, I think it's a good win for the workers as well, because if you don't have that kind of case management and you need help, where are you going to find it?
If you're an honest person, you should be happy with that. If you're a dishonest person, I don't care that you don't like it.
That's kind of my view. Like, yeah. You know, as I deal with parents and friends' parents trying to navigate the healthcare system as they get older and need more care, it's challenging. It's challenging.
Yeah, but you make a great point. There's always that employee who says, what, you didn't use your 10 physiotherapy sessions this year? I use it for a massage. Well, we can do that? Oh, yes. They can tell you what page it's on in the agreement and exact. Okay. I look for help when I need it. I don't try to take advantage of everything. And listen, if it's part of your benefits and you want to use them, go nuts. If your company offered that and you want it, that's fine. I'm not saying that's wrong, but some people really know how to work the system to its maximum and take advantage of it. Most of us, we just, when we're sick, we look for help.
You talk to HR managers in any large organization, and they will tell you which employees will not be in on the Friday or Monday after they accrue a sick day.
I think you'd probably ask their colleagues, because guess what? They're the ones who have to do the extra work when those people are away.
Yeah, and people notice, but I've known people like this. We've all worked with them. You know, this isn't going to deal with that situation, but it will deal with, as I said, the different groups within short-term disability, those who want help but can't find it, and those who are abusing the system. You know, the people who are not going to come back, it'll continue to care for them.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate all the work you did in the background there to get us some a little bit of understanding of what happened there, because I think you'd agree with me. It was a bit bizarre. I mean, I've seen tentative deals where the union said, you know, we're not recommending this, but we thought the membership could have their own vote. So, but this was, yeah, we're recommending it because that's what we have to do. And then she proceeded to tear it to shreds.
We're recommending a deal that we hate. I think Laura Walton hates it. I don't think the rest of the bargaining team hates it.
And I don't think the membership's going to hate it either. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Brian Lilly of Sun Media writing about that today. You can read his column online if you like, or pick up the old-fashioned newspaper. Is it Mondays they don't publish now, though? Ottawa Sun, I know that they were cutting back on one day. Anyway, I read them online. I think that's what most people do these days. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
Trending. Trending today.
With Katie Colbert. And she watches bad pop culture TV, so I don't have to. She just brings me the highlights. I was sort of tempted, though, to watch the American Music Awards last night, because you know I love music, and it's always fun. But in the end, I thought, I got to be up for work early. So what did I miss? Michael Jackson came back?
Michael Jackson was scheduled to have a tribute performed by Chris Brown. Now, that wasn't controversial enough that that got canceled 2 days before the American Music Awards when he was scheduled to go on.
Did someone get the American Music Awards committee access to an internet and they did a Google search?
I guess.
How could you not know Chris Brown? Well, they probably thought that whole Rihanna thing is what? More than a decade ago, 12, 13 years ago?
They started dating in 2005, so it's been a long time.
Yeah.
They thought maybe it would have blown over by now. Who knows? But Chris Brown was a bit, you know, he was a bit hurt. He obviously did resorted to Instagram and posting some questionable things saying, hey, like, this is what you would have missed. He did post a little snippet of his performance that he'd already fully rehearsed with a whole team saying, this would have been amazing. Now, that wasn't controversial enough. He then goes on to win the award for Favorite Male R&B Artist. And Kelly Rowland, who is part of ex-former of Destiny's Child, and she goes to defend him.
And the American Music Award goes to Chris Brown.
Tonight, so I'm accepting this award on his behalf. Excuse me, chill out. But I want to tell Chris, thank you so much for making great R&B music. And I want to tell him, thank you for being an incredible performer. I'll take this award, bring it to you. I love you. Congratulations. And congratulations to all the nominees in this category.
So there's a lot of booing. A lot of people were a bit uncomfortable by this. They didn't know how to feel. There was a lot of commotion going on to the point where Kelly Rowland has to say, chill out, everybody. Let's calm down. And people are not sure how to feel. Some people are, you know, excited that somebody's standing up for him because they think enough time has passed that we can appreciate his music. And some people are like saying, hey, you know, Rihanna's just stepping back into the music field after, you know, not being in it for a while. Let's take the man's name out of our mouth for a little bit.
Here's
I don't
the
know.
Thing. You know, he's a talented guy.
Yeah.
Can't take that away from him. I'm sure I haven't heard his new music, but he's certainly a talented guy. Maybe he deserved the award from a musical point of view. Here's the thing. Even murderers get out of jail eventually, and we do all deserve second chance, and it was a long time ago. All of that's true. But in the court of public opinion, if you beat your girlfriend or wife, you may be booed even 12, 15 years later, and that's just part of the price you pay. You know, you have a right to live your life, but people don't have to idolize you as a result of it.
Exactly.
So, and I don't know if I'm her, if I would take the chance and weigh in so much in his favor. It's not a good look.
Exactly. And you made a good point earlier saying it'll be really unfolding today if, you know, Kelly Rowland starts taking some of this heat and taking maybe, you know, she's next on the cancel culture blocker. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But I just thought this was an interesting choice for people to either stand with him or stand against him so publicly.
Hey, listen, he's allowed to make a living.
Of course.
It is a long time ago. He's served his time. That's fine. But I don't have to love him.
No, of course.
I don't like cancel culture where, you know, the minute we disagree with stuff, we want them to be unemployed and never,
yep.
You know. You know, it's a free world, so I can decide I'm not going to see that guy's movies. I'm not going to buy his music. I'm not. And other people can decide to do that. That's what happened there. The audience reacted. That tells you not enough time has passed.
They're not over it.
Maybe it never will.
Yep.
And if it doesn't, that's on him. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll. I've been a throw up the
sex in a. You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
As you know, Ottawa has a new police chief. His name is Eric Stubbs, and he takes over Ottawa Police Service at a very unusual time when it's been the center of a lot of conversation during the Emergencies Act inquiry. And I'm not sure it's a job that I would want to take at this moment in time, but Eric Stubbs raised his hand and he's arrived. Good morning. Nice to meet you.
Good morning, Bill. Pleasure.
So the timing, I guess, is going to dominate the conversation because the timing we can't change. I've been watching the Emergencies Act inquiry very closely, and something has been wrong at Ottawa Police Service. It's either there was an issue in the upper ranks below chief that was causing issues, or the issue was with the chief and that was causing the problems down the ranks. I would think your first job is to sort some of that out. Is Ottawa Police Service so broken you have to fix it, or does new leadership change and fix a lot of the problem? How are you going to get to the bottom of that?
Well, thanks, Bill. Do you mind, before I answer that question, I just want to just take a second to acknowledge, of course, on Friday we had a tragedy here at OPS. One of our team members, Constable Nadeau, was killed driving home after work. And I just wanted to acknowledge that Constable Nadeau, Drew, was, I can tell you, I didn't know him, obviously. It was day two of my work here. But I've learned a lot about him, and he, I can tell you, he was an incredible police officer, but an even better person. And that's been emphasized to me by all his teammates and his wife that that I spoke with as well, too. So the OPS is hurting right now in regards to his loss, and we're certainly here supporting the team. And but the community needs to know that they lost a real important person in the community.
Well, I'm happy you said it. I was going to ask you about it at the end because our family was talking about driving over the first weekend and how, you know, I've got a young son who's just driving on his own for the first time and a daughter who's learning to drive. And we're showing this photograph of how dangerous it can be on the roads and someone who's a professional. It's so heartbreaking to see someone so young still, right, with their whole life ahead of them.
Yeah, certainly.
Losing their life like that. It's just crushing to see. So
right. So thanks.
I'm glad you brought it up. Now let's get our sleeves rolled up and down to business.
Right.
You took this job at a time. You knew Ottawa Police Service was in the spotlight. And did that have an impact on how you approach your job in the first weeks?
Well, you know, obviously, you know, everybody knows about the Convoy Freedom protest and the fallout from that, the current commission that's ongoing. And, you know, from a distance, I've been watching it, you know, from my spot in British Columbia for a number of months. And sure, there certainly was issues, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda on a number of different things. But I'm certainly, you know, I'm learning more, you know, as I've, you know, as I've started here, you know, just more details and whatnot. But I'm certainly, you know, not going to come to any conclusions or publicly speak about anybody, you know, at this point. We're going to let the commission do its job, and we're going to get some recommendations in a couple months. And, you know, internally here, I'm certainly wanting to know our processes, our structure in terms of how we approach these things. You know, the Ottawa Police Service, you know, deals with protests literally every day. And they have a good structure and process for those day-to-day protests, you know, connect with the organizers, try to make it, you know, peaceful, safe, legal, and they do their thing. And this obviously was something that was more significant. So we'll look at how we approach these larger events, and we'll be better next time.
Yeah, as someone who worked with the RCMP, you've had a lot of experience with that out west where you were. And I know there were a few First Nations leaders who were a bit concerned about that. They don't like how the RCMP has handled those situations, so they're concerned about someone coming from that organization. Have you had a chance to reach out to our First Nations community in the Ottawa area to talk about that?
You know, I've I have spoken with some Indigenous leaders in my first couple of days, but certainly a lot more to do, a lot more to reach out and have those discussions and start building, you know, a relationship with the Indigenous leaders in the Ottawa area. But you know, I've started, but of course, there's a lot more work to do there.
Yeah, I don't know where policing is headed right now. If you asked me before the protests, I would have said the movement to downsize police forces, to putting money elsewhere, into solving problems at the root causes, those had taken hold. Defund the police is a movement that was stronger in the U.S. than here, but we saw some of it here. But what's interesting is many of the people who were calling for those changes were the first ones to ask police to get tough when the protests moved into their neighborhoods. So we're back to the beginning where, you know, on one hand, we want our police to be kind and gentle. Until the problem shows up at our front door, then we want you to take some damn action and do it quickly. How does a modern police service balance those differing views in our community about how policing should take place?
Right. Well, you know, you know, defunding the police, you know, I'm strongly against that perspective in terms of that's the answer to our to the issues. However, part of the answer is certainly changing our approach. It doesn't matter who you are, a police agency, a private company, you have to change to your environment that you work in. And, you know, in the last 3, 4, 5 years with, you know, with COVID, with protests, with, you know, defund the police movement and whatnot, and, you know, some trust that, you know, has eroded from police in general, you know, the OPS or in general in the industry across the country, we have to adjust our the way we approach certain aspects of our job, and that's important for us to survive, is to change. And we need to listen to the community, listen to our membership in terms of what will work, and apply a new strategy.
Yeah, you have an outside perspective, I think, that could be, I guess, valuable in a way that when I moved to this city 6 years ago from a city that had a lot more crime, especially gun violence, it felt very safe and peaceful to me, but that's kind of a relative thing, isn't it? Everyone has an idea of how safe their city is or isn't, and it's not based on what things are like in Chicago, Detroit, Toronto, or anywhere else. It's based on their feeling about that. As an outsider coming in, what was your sense of Ottawa and what crime is like in this city versus a lot of other similar cities in the world?
You know, as I did the research, and you know, I lived here 5 years ago for 3 years, and we're in different pockets of the community during that time, and you certainly get a feeling. And then, you know, five and a half years later, a number of areas have changed. You know, and you know, I think the sort of the primary area that people reference is the market, the Byward Market, and how that area has changed. And if people you know, or maybe if I just use the market as an example, where I do that because I've heard from some community members about their concerns in that area. That is a feeling clearly that people have, is that it's less safe there. I mean, overall, I mean, I think Ottawa is a safe community based on what I've seen. You know, the crime severity index number, you know, floats give or take around 50. I've lived in a lot of communities where, you know, it's 150, it's a lot higher and whatnot. So, you know, some of that gives me solace, but there's no doubt that people are feeling less safe, and we have to address that. And some of the feelings of not being safe are attached to some of what's going on in the street. And some of that is, we have our piece of the pie to manage that, but I certainly strongly believe that we have to work with other community partners, be it the city hall, be it social agencies, et cetera, the health sector, to address some of these issues. And if we work together, I think that's where we can make the biggest difference.
I know it's an oversimplified term, but we hear it so much, community policing. Would you call yourself an advocate of community policing, and what does it mean to you, that term?
Certainly an advocate, Bill, there's no doubt. What it means to me, like, you know, on a policing side, we need to listen to the community. And, you know, in this sort of state right now where some of the trust has been eroded, we have to earn that trust back. And we do that by not only talking, but our actions as well, too. So that's, you know, sort of one part of community policing. You know, working with the community, educating them on some of the areas where they need to maybe be educated on in terms of being safe, cryptocurrency, cybercrime, et cetera, elder abuse, the list goes on. But the other side of it, of course, is what I just referenced, is working with the communities. What does the community have to offer in terms of resources, NGOs, social agencies, city hall's willingness to invest in resolving some of the problems and working with us. And I firmly believe, and I've done it in the past, when we work with the community and we're focused, laser focused on a particular issue, that's where you can really move the bar. And in this case, you know, the safety will really see an increase.
Well, nice to meet you. I hope we'll have many conversations in the future, and not always because bad things have happened in the city. But again, I did want to pass along my condolences to the Ottawa Police Service and family members of the officer that you lost. I know it's a heartbreaking weekend for you guys, and a tough challenge for you to come in at a time like this and take over a police service that I walked away from what I've seen at the Emergency Act inquiry so far, thinking this is a police service that overall had a great reputation before the protests on Parliament Hill. And I think we'll continue to have afterwards. I think the service has taken a bit of a black eye, but I think overall we've got a lot of great men and women who do great work in this city.
Well, thanks, Bill. I agree 100%. And, you know, in terms of, you know, kind of your first question in terms of, you know, the leadership here and whatnot, I've met a lot of the leadership here, the senior team, and a lot of quality people here, and they're passionate about their jobs, and they'll continue to be so. So I agree with you.
Including an interim chief that I think did a pretty good job while we were waiting for a permanent hire.
Really good job, yeah. And you know, I mentioned I admired him from afar when I had no thought about coming here, but just seeing what he did, stepping in and managing the service, really respect him a great deal for what he did.
And how professional all of our police services were on the day the day and a half that the protest was finally broken up, patiently, slowly, no serious injuries. I thought that was just spectacular look at policing when it's done very well.
It is. Yeah, it's a difficult thing. Keep your patience, keep your professionalism, and treating people with respect, even if, you know, some buttons are trying to be pushed, and just keeping professional. It's it takes a lot, and they did do a great job.
Okay, welcome back to Ottawa. I'll give you the same rules that I give everyone who moves here. Don't tell anyone how nice it is. We don't need them coming here.
All right, I'll write that down. Perfect.
Keep it to ourselves. Ottawa's Police Chief, Eric Stubbs. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
News Talk 580 CFRA's $1,000 Minute. Brought to you by Alpine Credits. Homeowners get approved.
Well, we didn't get a 15th texter today, or a 14th, or a 13th, or a 12th. We didn't get any, which is very unusual for us, but that's okay. I know you're disappointed, right? You like to play along? You're in your office right now? How about we do it anyway? Ready? Okay. Start the timer. Question number one. Which former U.S. president is unsure if he will be using Twitter? Which FIFA team lost on day one of the World Cup? Alongside Elizabeth May, who is the co-leader, yes, they have a co-leader now, of the Green Party? When is the first World Cup game for Team Canada? How many episodes does the series Crossfire have? When will Prime Minister Trudeau testify at the inquiry? Who's the new Ottawa chief of police? Who told the AMA's crowd to chill out? How much did Amazon spend on the first season of The Rings of Power? And question number 10, which team won the CFL Grey Cup last night? The answers are Donald Trump, Qatar, Jonathan Pedneau. First World Cup game for Canada is Wednesday at 2. There are 3 Crossfire episodes. We'll tell you more about that coming up here in a minute. When will the Prime Minister testify at the inquiry? It's Friday. You think they worked that out? You think there was a negotiation? I think there was. We want him on Friday because no one pays attention to the news on Saturday morning and Sunday. Oh, we're gonna keep clips. And I don't care how old news it seems on Monday. We are not ignoring that. That feels like a bit of a dodge, huh? The Prime Minister conveniently is on Friday, the worst news day for news and the best one for people who are in the news. Unless it's positive news. Who's the new Ottawa Police Chief? It's Eric Stubbs. Who told the AMA's crowd to chill out? Kelly Rowland, former member of Destiny's Child. How much did Amazon spend on the first season of The Rings of Power? Apparently it's $1 billion. And the Argos are the new Grey Cup champions. Congratulations to all of you who got 10 out of 10 at home. Next time, text us. Bill's Best Binges coming up next, The Morning Rush.
Now, get it.
Now, The Inbox.
Boy, these are hard to read today. More than usual, the texts. A lot of them, honestly, I'm reading your text. I have no idea what you're talking about. Here's part of the problem. People text in the moment I say something, and then 3 hours later, I don't really know what they mean. So try to be a little more specific, like this one. That is what I thought too, Bill. Okay. I don't feel it's settled. I assume that means this school situation. I feel like a strike is still hanging over our head. Actually, a number of people texted similar things. One person said that their kid doesn't understand much, but did walk away feeling like there could still be a strike. Well, when a union leader says, "We've reached an agreement and it's awful, but we'll let our members vote on it," it's not a very strong endorsement, is it? I've never heard Bill so grossly biased and so horribly wrong at the same time. His understanding of bargaining is sadly lacking. Mike Vanier adjacent. Again, don't know specifically what you're talking about, but boy, for 40 years I've been interviewing union members and management over more strikes than I can even count. I think I understand how it works pretty well. I really do. But maybe you could give me a specific where I'd say, oh yes, I'm horribly wrong there. If it's the idea of fighting for what the schools look like when it comes to staffing levels, I know unions often bargain for some of those changes. But I think in the case of public sector unions, it is totally wrong. First of all, I don't think they should have the right to strike at all. But if they do, they have to remember when they're trying to get the public on our side, like, we're fighting for you for better education. We have another way to do that. We have a democracy. We have a government. They control education. We are the managers. I know a lot of you thought you were on the union side on this. You're like, give them more money. Where do you think the money's coming from? Coming from you. I want to vote on that. And I get one. It's called an election. Somebody else agrees, though, with my horribly wrong take. Staffing is a union overstep. Even the union member I talked to last week was uncomfortable with it. And from what we hear, many other union members thought, it's too far. You represent me as a worker. Fight for me. It's not your job to change the entire education system. That's our job. The public. That's our job through our elected officials. If you don't like our elected officials, well, there'll be another election. Get out and vote. That is what I thought too, Bill. I don't feel it settled. No voice should be silenced. Let them speak so everyone can see how stupid they can be. Is this my thoughts on Twitter and Donald Trump?
Yes.
I don't agree with that. No voice should be silenced. I mean, in a philosophical sense, I guess you could say I'm an absolutist when it comes to freedom of speech. Problem is, Twitter's a company with sponsors, with ads. And if you allow hate speech and anger and conspiracy theories, there's a price you're going to pay for that. So as a private company, you have a right to say, Bill Carroll, you're spreading hatred. That's making our clients mad. We don't want you on here anymore. You can do that. That's not, because Twitter is not the government. Free speech as a government concept, no one should go to jail for their words. But people can keep you off Twitter. My point was more narrow than that. He was the president of the United States. Keeping him silenced is bad for democracy. That's it for me. Have a great day, everybody. I'll have more things to say tomorrow, no doubt. Enjoy yourself. This has been The Morning Rush. I'm Bill Carroll.